Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so that my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good in it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. I called it yesterday the last day of the off season. It is for me. I'll get away from it here, you know, at least in terms of work, for a couple days, for 3 days after today, Labor Day weekend. And I'll be hoping to hear from several fans today as we look ahead to next week. I need to start with the Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau tragedy. It feels inappropriate to not. I don't know that there's anything to debate here, except for to say just what a horrible story this is. And I just can't imagine this family's pain and their anger. It's just such a stupid thing. I don't want to preach. I don't want to preach on drunk driving. I mean, we kind of all know. You do see people, whether they're drinking or not, do these crazy things on the road. And I've just never understood it. I just have to say, I've just never understood. Where are you going that is so important that cannot wait, whatever, one extra minute? Does anybody do the math? I mean, you see what I read this was, they were on bikes. I've been on these New Jersey, these two-lane roads in New Jersey one time, and I was pretty, like, really nervous this one time with my family because there was torrential rain and you really just couldn't see, and they're really, really tight roads, if that's what was the case here. But they're on their bikes, and this guy who allegedly was under the influence and struck them tried to pass two cars at once, and as he was doing so, the second car, the one in front, drifted to the left to make room for the bicyclists to, you know, give them space. And the driver then tried to pass that car on the right. So weaving at probably a high rate of speed, weaving between the two cars he was passing. And then there was the impact. And I just don't get it. I mean, what is so important? The selfishness of such a move. You know, we've probably all seen it. Some of you have probably done it. It just shows such a lack of respect for other people. You know, like, I don't understand. So it's a terrible story. How it's juxtaposed with it being on the weekend of their sister's wedding, it's just like hard to fathom what that must be like for that family. Impossibly sad. Again, there's not really much to discuss. I mean, we all know all this, but I just wanted to start with it because it feels wrong not to. Let's get to football. Week one is almost here. Like I said already, yesterday I called today the last day of the offseason, which means, you know, last call for takes, predictions, anything that you have been, you know, trying to figure out that you've landed on here for the last, wow, what, like 7 months? more. 803-0550. I'll be looking for your calls soon. Bulldog is off again today. He and I are together Tuesday after we get through Labor Day weekend, and let's go. I mean, we'll, like I said yesterday, we'll be talking about point spreads and weather conditions and injury reports and the Arizona Cardinals and all this stuff. Very different once we get to next week from the offseason talk. What has been the number one topic of the offseason? Wide receiver. And isn't it a coincidence or not? I don't know. It's just something that on our last day here, in an offseason where not everybody, you know, you try to be positive about it, but mostly a lot of us have been bemoaning the state of the Bills' receiver room and just what will life be like post Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. It's a new time for them. Isn't it something that on this last day of that conversation, you have the Brandon Ayuk story? Brandon Ayuk won. He held out. The 49ers are really good. And he won. He got his money. I don't know what they'll do in the future to, you know, make everything work with that roster, but they kind of always had to do it. I mean, who were they going to trade him for? Maybe they could have traded him for somebody good, but not as expensive and just done that. But they didn't end up doing that. They paid Ayuk. And so in terms of the Bills, we don't have a Ayuk trade to Pittsburgh or to Cleveland to compare, you know, things to. And, okay, so Pittsburgh trades whatever it would have been, 2 second-round picks or something, I don't know. And we all talk about then whether the Bills should have done that. The Bills have, I mean, we know this, but it can't be ignored in any conversation about that idea, is the cap, they have cap problems. You know, this was the year where they tried to clean things out. They have the second most dead cap money in the NFL to Denver. Like 25-point-something percent, I think it is. Approximately a quarter of their cap space is dead money, like not going to active players on the team. And just, you know, they would have probably, if it were even possible, it seems like everything's always possible, but they would have had to get very creative at best to get anything, you know, going with Brandon Ayuk. But ultimately, again, he is not traded. And so the Bills go into this season. It's unclear who their number one guy will be. If you were to ask me who is the most important player on the team that isn't Josh Allen, and I would love to hear your answer to that question, who is the most important player on the team that isn't Josh Allen? I think it's Dalton Kincaid. And that, you know, that's good and bad. I think that's good and bad. You know, what's good about it? He's talented. He's young. They don't have the young. Well, they have Coleman. They have Coleman. This is something I was just sort of like knee-jerk reaction saying for a long time. Like that young receiver. They do have a promising young receiver in Keon Coleman. Anyway, Kincaid, I don't expect Coleman to have like a huge impact, at least for a while this year. I think we'd all say if you got Rashi Rice's rookie season for Kansas City out of Coleman, like we'd sign. We would all take that. Especially if it results in a Super Bowl like that one did. But I think what the Bills will need to do is have some way of maximizing Allen's ability, you know, chunk plays, as they say, down the field. And Kincaid is probably, I'm guessing, the best guy they have for that. They do tell you, and this is what you want to hope happens, that he presents a certain matchup challenge for teams. You know, if there are two tight ends on the field, just how they can make him work. And it can't be just dump-offs. Like, it has to be real plays, real football plays that are meaningful. And while I think, you know, whether it's Khalil Shakir or someone else, Kincaid is the guy where really this has to happen. If that doesn't happen, I think they're in tough. Because, I mean, I say all the time, I think they want to play short. Sal's talking about this now, like horizontal stuff and trends in the league, too high safeties, all this, that by the players the Bills have signed, and even including on the practice squad, that's my conversations with Sal a couple times this week, They seem to indicate the Bills maybe feeling like they have to adjust and have players who can be more, I guess, versatile would be a good word for it, but not as threatening down the field. Kincaid, though, he is the exception. You drafted him to do that, not, you know, be Isaiah McKenzie or even be Dawson Knox. He's a tight end in name only. He, to me, and who is yours? He, to me, is the most important player on the Bills that isn't Allen. Why is it good and bad? It's bad to me. It's not ideal, I'll put it that way, to me, because Knox exists, and they have this collection of slot receivers that are, I guess, not always going to be playing in the slot, and Kincaid is kind of like, he kind of needs to be in that role. He'll be out wide some, too. But he'll also be off the field a lot, I think. So, I don't know what you get. You know, if he plays 60% of snaps and has a good, you know, target depth, right? I mean, you can have a really good season there, but it's kind of like, it's a thin bet, you know? I mean, to get a big year out of a guy who is splitting time or whatever you want to call it is not something you want to bank. It's not Stephon Diggs, you know? Stephon Diggs, go out there, get open. He does. Here's the ball. 14 yards. That wasn't always the case. It didn't end like that, but that was good living. And this year is going to be different. So it is just, you know, I don't want to, I'm going to get to 7 o'clock and this will be the last day for all this sort of off-season type discussion. And receiver has so dominated that, at least in my mind, it needed to. It's not the only question about the Bills. I mean, defense is a big question, just broadly, with Hayden Poyer and Trey White and Matt Milano. And what is Von Miller, Sal, talking about? You know, did he want to not use the word situational for Von Miller? But, you know, a low number of snaps, maybe you're just going to pick your spots with him. Not at all. Does that sound like a guy that you like? If Sal's going to describe him like that, and not to single him out, but he's, you know, who I just talked to about this stuff, the way he was talking would mean to me that I can't pick Von Miller to be the most important Bills player that isn't Allen, because it doesn't sound like he's going to have like a huge role. He's going to be part-time, and so I wouldn't pick him. I don't know defensively who it is, whether that's Bernard or Rousseau, Oliver, you know, somebody that's been around, Douglas. I think, optimistically, McDermott has earned the benefit of the doubt that he can coach up defense and scheme it in a way that they I don't want to say should, like it's a given. I mean, they've lost a lot of good players, but you can be optimistic that they'll be good. But I kind of think by the personnel that it's going to have to come through turnovers. And so you're going to want a pass rush for that, and we'll see what the Bills are in that department. Douglas has always been a player, like a ball hawk. Bernard last year was a version of that, you know, just like these big turnover plays. I don't know if he's like rock solid, but what you got out of him last year made a big difference. It was a huge help to the Bills, especially when they'd lost Milano. So there's a lot to be figured out by their on their defensive side of the ball here this year. I want to be optimistic because of McDermott, and there's some talent. It's also, defense is also like, this is up, this is sort of like McDermott's, it's not an opportunity for him. He's the head coach. But what do we always say, you know, like when talking about him and comparing the Bills to other teams, what is the value, what is the benefit of having your head coach be on the defensive side? It doesn't seem optimal. You know, we've kind of talked about this many times. When the Bills lose in the playoffs to Kansas City and Cincinnati and watch, you know, the Rams win a Super Bowl and San Francisco go and Philadelphia, you know, you've got Dallas even. Like, you've got, you don't see defensive coaches running the show. And so we get jealous and we sort of wonder, you know, if Joe Brady and the Bills offense is excellent this year, then there goes Joe Brady and we just keep doing that. It's a year for McDermott to make a point, you know, to tell everybody, to show everybody why there is this benefit, why it's worth having him as a coach. I don't mean like big picture, face of the franchise, team spokesman, culture, all those kinds of things. And, you know, that all that stuff can be debated in terms of like how important and what's real and all that. I just want, and he's not going to be the defensive coordinator here. He's got Bobby Babich for that, who's been here the whole time and, you know, is probably some extension of McDermott. This is a year for, without those veterans, without a roster where you just sort of expect, assume even that they're going to be fine. They've been good so many of these seasons. Well, this one's different. What will it be? And I don't know. Like, you can be optimistic about that, like I'm saying, but it's kind of the theme of this year is that it's a little bit less of a given, you know, that they're going to be fine. I think these recent years, it's pretty much felt going into the season like they were fine. And they were. And it was just about the postseason, and that hasn't worked out. But I don't think this year, you know, as we kind of sum things up today, I don't feel like they're fine. They could be, but there's too much that's different. And it's those are important areas for me to think that they're just going to roll out the ball and have another double-digit win season. I wouldn't want to bet against it, but it's just less of a certainty, in my mind anyway. 803-0550 for your calls. Would love to hear your takes here as we get to the end of the offseason. Mercifully, right? Let's go. Week one next week, Arizona Cardinals. I want to talk about openers, too. Fun to look back on some of them. The last Bills Week one home win with fans there is McDermott's first game. It predates Josh Allen. Last year at the Jets, the loss on Monday night. Year before at the Rams, the win in the opening game. Year before, 21 is Pittsburgh winning here. 20 is a Jet game, but nobody's there. So we all watched it on TV, watched an empty stadium. 19 is at the Jets, I believe. 18 is the disaster Nathan Peterman in Baltimore. 17, home win. That's a Jet game too, isn't it? That's their last like week one party at the stadium would be 7 years ago. I have a lot of fond memories of openers that were important and great that I went to and just love thinking about that here as we get to that time on the calendar. 803-0550 for your calls. We've got Steve first up. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in, and I think it's going to be Tyler Bass, just because I'm going to assume that these offensive players are going to do their job, and I think with how close these games are going to be, especially if they are going to run the ball and burn a little bit more clock, you know, he's going to have to make kicks, and if we lose field position and he starts self-destructing, we can't go out and replace him. And, you know, he's going to have to show up this season.
You know, it's interesting that we start here on the phones, because we talked about Bass yesterday and maybe the day before. And I've had the sense that, thank you, Steve, yourself and a lot of fans are really tight about him. And I'm just really not, but it's not because I'm expecting him, you know, to make every field goal or anything like that. We'll just have to see. Like, he's struggled enough. It's such a relative term. I mean, really, how many field goals did he miss last year? Four the whole season? And then three in the playoffs. You know, that's memorable. That's where we ended. It's not nothing. It's just, I guess I kind of want to bet on him, you know, to be fine. What is interesting about him, though, to think about, listen to sort of the theory there, right? And this I am bracing for. I have said all summer that I think they're going to be more of a conservative team that's running the ball more. And, you know, Steve uses, he mentions field position. Did he also say running the clock? You know, I'm not ready to go back in time quite yet, really. But, and that's also a relative term. What are we talking about? Like, they're going to throw 10 passes a week? No. But I do think those passing numbers will come down. And I think every sign points to that. Who's on the team? What changed? They probably should think. It's the whole conversation about receiver that they can't lean into that as hard as they have been able to do with Diggs. They probably should think that. This is what we've got. It's different now. We're going to have to adjust. It went both ways. Like, that wasn't all just circumstances, what changed to the roster. Some of it was by design. Of course, even trading Diggs was that. And that all, well, not so much Diggs, because that was more, you know, personal stuff, probably. But that all came to fruition last year after Joe Brady took over, when Diggs was even on the field. His numbers came down. It's not because he just quit. They didn't use him quite as, you know, prominently. And they played this way that I'm foreseeing this year. And they won every week until the Chiefs, a game in which their offense was pretty much fine anyway. So why wouldn't, this is how I try to think about things always. Like, what happened? It went well. The roster, even the way the roster changed, may even push them more in that direction. Why wouldn't it look like that? The answer to that could be, or maybe should be, Allen, and just, well, are you getting the most out of him if you sort of rein in the offense? Maybe not. But one of the talking points is always taking more off his plate, and this would be doing that. And I just, if it has to be that way because Diggs is gone and they just don't have the number one receiver, all of that, if it has to be that way, I get it. I'm not excited about it. Like, to me, that is not how I'd want to do this. I still want to put the pedal down. And I know two high safeties, and I know you just can't have anything you want. But I'm sort of bracing for that. I'm predicting the Bills downshift, or if that's actually not what it would be, right? I'm downshifting. Anyway, I'm predicting the Bills to sort of play a little slower, more running the ball, and I'm not really a fan of that. So it's kind of like a bigger picture reason why I have concerns this year. I think some of the roster turnover was out of necessity. You know, Davis leaving was going to happen, and salary cap challenges, you know, all of that. But some of it was intentional because of last year's success under Brady, you know, kind of playing that way. So why wouldn't they do it again? That's what I think. Thanks again, Steve. 803-0550. I'll look for your calls again right after a short break. Later.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eggman Bloom, Fantasy Friday, football guys. Let's take your fantasy questions throughout the day, too, if you've got them. This is the biggest weekend of the year for that. And Paul Hamilton will join me later. Paul has been out with the Bills quite often. We've got the Sabres around the corner. Next time we talk, it'll be September. And also, of course, the tragedy with Johnny Gaudreau and his brother. We'll talk to Paul about that a little bit, too. Thanks for listening. Glad to have you along. Maybe you've started your Labor Day weekend already. Good for you. I think a lot of my coworkers have. Let me just put my hand right above my eyes. I look off into the distance just for any sign of life. This is Mike Shope. Bulldog is off. This is WGR.
They just get it off into the end zone. Contact. What a catch! A miraculous, implausible, impossible catch by 12. Travis Hunter with another clip on the reel.
That's unbelievable. That's a glitch in EA Sports College Football 25.
The Buffs, Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders get the win barely over North Dakota State last night in college football. I watched the end. I watched some of the second quarter and then the end. Football is back, and I know it because I had my first play call that made me crazy of the season last night when Colorado got a stop. They were up like 5, final score, right? 5. Under 2 minutes. Opponent had one timeout, and on first down, they threw the ball deep. Incomplete. Like, okay, well, I like to throw the ball, but what? I mean, run the clock out on them. Yeah, so I felt football last night. Annoyed at the announcers. Annoyed at the play calling. Let's go. Week one. Colin is on WGR next. Hi, Colin.
How we doing, man?
Okay.
I just wanted to mention what you said earlier about the most important Bill outside of Josh. I think it's Deion Dawkins, just because he kind of keeps Josh alive on his blind side. And I think if Josh is healthy, standing up tall and straight, I think we can win, like, any game against anybody. So, like, I think that's got to make him rather important. And I also, sidebar, I think he's one of the best left tackles in the league that no one talks about, besides, obviously, Bills fans.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Thank you. I mean, it's definitely reasonable to put Dawkins on any short list of important, most important players. I mean, that's all very true what you said. Thanks for the call. 803-0550 is the number. The opener for the Bills next Sunday at home against Arizona. Yesterday, I made a top five list, just, you know, for something to do. And so I decided my five favorite home Bills openers. It's a personal list. Two are losses. So it's not, you know, five best. It's just my five. And in chronological order, they are, by the way, the two that they lost are the two that I was at. So you can blame me for these if you want. 1979, my first game, 7 years old with my parents' friends. It was they and I, just the three of us. I don't know. It seems kind of weird, but that's what happened. And somewhere in the recesses of my brain, I'm sure I've got images from seeing the stadium for the what would have been the first time. I just, like, now lived on Grand Island then. That's where I grew up. And so we never went to the stadium for any reason, Orchard Park. And I'm sure I couldn't even believe how big it was. And then we sat there in the rain. I talked about this game recently. It came up how everybody had ponchos on. It's just like the crowd was all just different colors of that garbage bag poncho material, you know, scattered all around the crowd. And then the Bills had a chance to beat Miami for the first time in a decade, and they didn't because they missed a field goal at the end. Tom Dempsey, 9-7. So that has to be on my list of five home openers. These are all week one games, by the way, like season opener that they played at home. The next year, I don't have any particular personal memory of it, but it's very significant in Bills history. 1980, they do beat Miami that day, 17-7. Goalposts come down, so that would be one of the more significant ones, even though I'm not even sure if it was on TV. I don't think it was. How about that? Can you believe that? Has the show ever sounded older? A Bills game, a football game not televised, the blackout. When did the blackout go away? Zach, do you know? Do you remember the blackout going away?
Oh, I remember them. I remember it. I don't remember it going away. But I always remember it was late in the season. All of a sudden, it was like, no, you have to get the $5 tickets to actually go see the game.
I'm asking, though, like, when did they change the rule, if you know? Like, would you know what year there would have been a game that you couldn't watch? And then how long has it been? 10 years?
Maybe? Since 2015. So just under. Or just over.
So in 2015, yep. There was no more blackout. Okay, that was long overdue. Thank you. 1988. So I'm 16. This was an opener against Minnesota. This would have been Thurman Thomas's first game. And I choose it because there was just a lot of excitement about the Bills. 86 is Kelly's arrival. 87, they got a lot better. Okay, can they get a lot better again in 88? And they did. They won a low-scoring game that day against the Vikings. And it was, like, to me, sort of the beginning. It was an AFC East winning team. And so what? You had 88, 89, 90, 91, 93, 95, you know, all division title seasons. So think of 88. They beat the Vikings maybe 13-10. And then the next week they beat Miami, I think it was 9-6. And that was that season. Even though you think of all the great players on offense, guys who became legends, that was a defense year. 88, but also a great year. So I'll pick that one. 91 would be on a short list of the best Bills games ever, I think, against the Dolphins. 91 opener. So you have Super Bowl 25 and all that was all through that offseason, you know, the Bills were celebrated for almost winning the Super Bowl. We did that once. And so, okay, well, now they should be better, right? Just more having that experience, and I don't know even if there's a way to find out if they were like the favorite that year. I'm not sure they would have been. Maybe they were the AFC favorite at least. But here, such anticipation for the 91 season and a rematch with the Dolphins from a playoff game in the snow the previous year. Like, this is going to be great. I did not go to this game, but I remember it very well, watching it, you know, with friends back in 1991. And the Bills get down early, 14-0. Mark Hicks, I think, is the name of the Miami running back that day. And, like, this is just sort of a, you know, cold water splash in your face. This was not supposed to happen. The Bills beat the Dolphins in the division. They beat them in the playoffs. This was not, you're not supposed to lose this game. And they didn't. Thurman's incredible, 35-31. Maybe Dick Enberg on the call, like just the best ever. And that is a very memorable one for me, 1991. And then I'm putting 2002 just because of like what that game meant to me. Bledsoe's first, and I had season tickets for the first time that year. Incredible game. They lose it on the Chad Morton opening kickoff return of overtime after tying it on, I think, a fourth down pass to Eric Molds very late in the fourth quarter. Back and forth, beautiful day. I was just very happy with myself that day to be there and to be a part of that. 2002 is the only year that I have not been on postgame since 99. And so that year I was freed up. I did pregame that year for WGR. I was freed up to go out to the stadium and have season tickets. So I was able to do that, and that was a great day. More recently, it's just been different. I've been at some of these, you know, Josh Allen openers and, you know, last through the drought, everything like that. But those are the ones I would pick. I think most people tend to pick ones from when they're younger, you know, just sort of like nostalgic, special memories. And of course, those late 80s, early 90s ones are, you know, great seasons. There was a loss to the Jets. I think that's 94 season opener. Four straight AFC titles, and then the Jets, who were kind of bad, with Boomer Esiason, beat the Bills soundly in the opener. Forgive me for this, please. It's four straight AFC titles, AFC East titles now. It was four straight AFC championships then. So you're going into year five of the thing, and that week one was, I could look up the spread from that game. I remember, the way I remember it, like, they probably were heavy favorites. And the Jets won something like 23-3 at Rich Stadium. And that was just not supposed to happen. That would, this year's game sort of has a little bit of that flavor. You know, we'll hopefully the Bills don't get crushed by the Arizona Cardinals to start this season. Yikes. But after all that success, the, you know, the 94 season was difficult. That team showed, they had games where they showed the, you know, the flashes from the AFC title teams. There was a big win over Montana and the Chiefs. They owned the Dolphins. There was a Sunday night win in Miami that year that was just kind of wild and fun, but they just had too many bad days and didn't get there. Kelly gets hurt late. 94 was rough. That's where we want to say we don't want to talk about parallels. You don't want to hear Bulldog and me in 2024 referencing 1994. But it kind of is what the last 4 years then were what we've had for the last 4 years here. Let's hope year five goes differently. 803-0550 for your calls. Remembering some Bills openers as we almost have arrived at week one this year. Most important, guys, I want to talk a little bit about Josh Allen's MVP chances as well today, whether that'll be next or later on. Fantasy football with Sigmund Bloom coming up at the top of the hour. Paul Hamilton later today as well. This is Mike Shope on WGR. One more thing I've wanted to talk about since yesterday, but have not gotten to it. I don't want to lose today without at least mentioning this. Did you see the Gotham sports streaming service being created? Yes Network and MSG. It includes the Sabres, by the way. And it was super pricey. I mean, go figure, of course. The deal was, like, if you already are a cable subscriber and maybe some other form of subscription, then you would not, you'd like be exempt. You could still get to watch. It's the Yankees, the Rangers, the Knicks, the Sabres, and a couple other teams. Whoever's on MSG, and yes, I guess. You could still see those teams play the quote, regular way. But you could also, like, if all you really want is those teams, or you'd want to substitute another subscription for this. I mean, holy cow, it was expensive, but that's a thing that's coming. And I'm just losing my mind over these. I'm going to sound so old again here, right? But I'm losing my mind and control of my, you know, my money a little bit, feeling this pressure to subscribe to so many different things. I mean, they're owning us when it comes to sports. It was always like sports were why people bought cable or satellite. Like, sports were the meal ticket. And now teams are just selling themselves. They're just going off on their own, and or leagues were first, and now even like this cluster of New York teams. And I don't know what I want to do. I mean, I've got Friday night next week, week one, the start of the NFL season is Peacock time with the Eagles and the Packers. That's Peacock only. And so I don't know. I mean, am I going to – I bought Peacock last year when they did that for the playoffs. Chiefs, Dolphins, I took the bait. I later canceled it, but man, plus you've got like the Disney bundle with Hulu, which we watch The Bear on, and ESPN Plus, where we watch The Bandits. Want that. I want Netflix, some great documentaries, different other shows. I didn't ever really want Paramount. I tried Paramount. I never even thought about it, and I got out of that, but that's extra golf, and that might be more NFL through CBS. I don't know. Like, I'm just sort of, a part of me wants to just give up. You know what? Tell me who wins. That's going to be kind of tough in here. Tell me who wins isn't really great for this job, but I just, it's just so much. Here's Derek with us. Hi, Derek.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a question. I'm number one overall pick in my draft. And obviously the consensus is to take McCaffrey, but the question is, it's a one running back starting PPR league. So that kind of throws me off almost to think maybe I should go receiver and, you know, pick up the running back later. It's just, I don't know. That's the only thing. I think I might be overthinking it. I just want to watch that. Or
no, that's an interesting one. And it's never really intuitive for me what to do in leagues like that. So,
because all the stats are always based on two running backs, and that's the thing that kind of throws me off.
Yeah, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but you might be overthinking it. It seems logical to me that would make having the best running back even more valuable, but maybe it is the other way around. Do you have flex positions? Like, you're gonna more than 10 running backs or 12?
Kind of normal, two flex. Okay. You can use tight end also, but. I think the main kickers. One running back.
If I didn't like do my own research on that, I would probably pick McCaffrey or Breece Hall.
Okay. I think I'm more than likely overthinking, but just wanted to.
No, I mean you might be right to wonder, Derek. Like, I would want to know. I mean, if you're in leagues with two receivers starting versus three, you know, my intuition is when it's three, all the more important that I not get stuck. But if you go the other way, would that be the sort of the same principle? And you can just sort of, you're going to get a good one. It's only one that you really need. So, boy, you got me. You got me on that one. Thanks, Derek. I want to know now. At some point, whether it's today, I don't know, but at some point I want to do, like, maybe I'll ask Sigmund. I could do that. My next guest will know the answer to this, I'm pretty sure. But all the apps are so sophisticated. If you had any sort of service, subscription, like Football Guys with Sigmund Bloom, they've got something called the Draft Dominator. And you can put in, like, you can do this at a lot of sites. You put in the starting lineup, like how many players at each position, and it will change the draft board for you. Like they will give you that answer if you have it, if you have that that app. Football Guys Draft Dominator, one of many great apps and websites that can help you out. Let's go to Scott next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mike. Just two quick questions. First off, is Djokovic the best ever?
It kind of pains me to say yes.
Pains you? How come?
He's just never been my guy. I'm a cliche. Federer for me, but
okay.
It's hard to put anybody above his career, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And then just something quick. I actually was on the previous show. I won't get into the whole thing. I really am disheartened for the strategy and the tack that the Bills have taken, starting with the 12 personnel and then moving to more running. And then now Josh having no receivers, in my opinion. So my question to you is this, much like the best quarterbacks in the history of football, do you think that Josh will finish his career here?
Man, that's tough to answer. How would we know at this point? Dak Prescott, thanks, Scott. Dak Prescott made the point earlier this offseason. He said something like, all the great quarterbacks I can think of did change teams. Because he's always being asked about whether Dallas wants him and whether he wants to stay. And he said, look, I do, but I recognize that many of the greatest quarterbacks ever have played for more than one team. And this doesn't have to be Josh Allen anymore than it has to be Patrick Mahomes. But he's right. Marino didn't. Elway didn't. Montana did. Brady, Manning, they did. Breeze played for more than one team, but he played for his second team much longer than his first, as opposed to Brady or Manning. Eli Manning was not great, so he does not qualify for this. But Rodgers is on his second team. Favre played for three. So would there be – I'm an odds guy. What would the odds be that Allen, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson play for a second team? They'd be good. Probably, because that does tend to happen. And that's, if you're not great, these guys are all paid like they're great, and they are. They deserve it. They deserve to be called that. But lesser guys will be more likely to move around, if they're good enough, like a Cousins, good enough to start in the league for a long time. He's on his third team. Probably the odds are good that even the best quarterbacks in the NFL will play for multiple teams. I think so. Interesting question. Pat is next. Hi, Pat.
I was gonna take a picture of it for you.
Pat, you there?
Yeah, I've been
looking at it. Okay. He's there. That's clear. He was there. Just wasn't here. Who else for this? I mean, when I was learning about football, you'd hear like Joe Namath and Unitas, right? Unitas playing for the Chargers at the end of his career, and Namath for the Rams. These kind of sad closures to Hall of Fame careers. Not everybody, but a lot of them. Thinking about that some more. Also, how many different streaming services I'm going to need to be able to actually watch sports over the next decade. It's not pretty. Looks like no Marquise Hollywood Brown for the Chiefs in week one. I think he's officially Hollywood Brown now. That was always his nickname, but like on draft sites, it just says Hollywood now. It doesn't even say Marquise Brown usually. He hurt his shoulder early in the preseason. I think, right, it was his shoulder. It was. And it sounded like right then he probably would miss week one. They play the first game against Baltimore, his first team. But Andy Reid all but ruled him out today for that one. Chiefs are a 3-point favorite at home against the Ravens. Joe Ostrowski said to us last week that he liked Baltimore there. And he kind of liked Arizona in our game. We are expecting to have Joe on Thursdays again this year, and we are expecting to have Trista on Tuesdays again this year. I'm working out the final times with each person, and it looks like Ross Tucker will be Tuesdays at 5, and that could start next week. Hopefully it does. It should, if he's not unavailable. Ross is calling UCLA Hawaii. I don't know, is that tomorrow? He went to Hawaii to call that game. And he has tweeted that he's going to be in Buffalo for Ravens Chiefs. Guy gets around. Ross will be with us, I think, on Tuesday, if not this week, coming up the following week by then. Sigmund Bloom is next. Want that one good fantasy question there from Derek and some others. What do we do with Ja'Marr Chase at this point? We'll talk to Sigmund, get his thoughts on how the Bills' layout looks, and much more after sports. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.